Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. And welcome back to Pixels. This is a show where we cover the news from the video games industry. We do this every couple of weeks, usually. We've skipped one, or was it two? I think it was one because I was on like semi-holiday, kind of. So we have a lot of stuff to cover. My name is Patrick Beja, and we are going to be talking about Gamescom, the new NVIDIA graphics cards, the rumors about the next Microsoft consoles, which we didn't I said consoles, plural, which we didn't cover because, as I said, I was not working. And the Nintendo Switch sales number. We're going to talk about Dead Cells, Battle for Azeroth, Evo, QuakeCon, so many things to cover. And I'm really glad that to accompany me in this wonderful adventure of gaming, I'm welcoming for the first time Alicia Judge on the show.
Hello. Hey,
welcome.
Hi. We have so much to get through. I'm surprised that you've got saliva left in your mouth just after that intro.
You know, that's what pros do. But most of our job on podcasts is to make sure that we can serve our saliva. That's half of the job is just that.
Pro tip. They don't tell you that on the Wikipedia entry for podcasting. But you heard it here.
Now you know. So you are a, just to introduce you to listeners who might not have heard of you before, you're a, as your lovely accent and the tea you're drinking, which people don't know, might indicate, a British games journalist, and you've been working at IGN, at BBC, at a few other places. Can you tell the listeners where you're coming from and who you are so they have a bit of context?
Yeah, sure. So I was IGN's UK host for 2 years, and I just left about 2 months ago to dive into the freelance pool. So I'm now writing, producing and presenting for a number of places, BBC Radio 1 being the main one, but doing stuff for The Guardian and things like that as well. It's been really good fun to just kind of try a bunch of different things.
Excellent. Well, this all sounds very respectable. I'm very glad you agreed to be on the show. and we have, as we both mentioned, a lot of ground to cover. So let's just get started with what's been happening at Gamescom. And as usual, you know, Gamescom is the biggest gaming trade show or gaming show in the world, as they often like to repeat. It's really big because there are over 300,000 people going there, but it's also weirdly placed in the year, so there aren't a lot of huge announcements. It's not E3, which is the perfect time, you know, to hype up your games for the holiday period. Now it's not too late, but it's more the time when people get their hands on those games that have been announced at E3, or that's usually the way it goes, and you get another round of marketing and trailers and things like that. But there are some interesting things happening there, and the biggest one is going to please the PC Master Race people amongst us. That's the latest graphics card from NVIDIA that's been announced. It's the RTX 20X series, so 2080 and 2070. There's a Ti and a Founders Edition and everything. And so they're going from GTX to RTX, I suspect, because they are pushing their big feature, which is ray tracing. And ray tracing is, I mean, obviously they are more powerful. They can do more with the power they have. It's smaller, thinner circuits, nano. I'm losing my words, but it's just the standard upgrades for GPUs and CPUs. That is not so surprising. The ray tracing that they're putting together is the big thing there. You seemed excited about that announcement. I mean, new graphics cards are always cool, but do you expect the increased price on those is going to be worth it? Or are you the kind of person that upgrades their, you know, card to the latest one every time chance they get?
Sure. No, I mean, it's such a good question. It's the main question that people should be asking right now, because we've got this really flashy conference with all these words about ray tracing and rendering and lighting and 4K gaming and all of this. And that's all very exciting. But the reality is, do we need it? And for prospective PC builders or those just in need of a graphics card upgrade, like the decision of not just what, but actually when to buy it is really tough, and tougher now than it usually is since they've just announced all these graphic cards. I'd say that if you really want to future-proof, then yeah, totally, like, fork out for the new ones, because, you know, we're already seeing games that are, you know, going to be using this technology. Like,
yeah, they showcased Battlefield 5 and Shadow of the Tomb Raider, right?
Exactly. Shadow of the Tomb Raider. There were a few others. We're already seeing games showing their trailers and showing that they're going to be running on this technology. And like, we know that NVIDIA has been working with Microsoft and Epic to get ray tracing integrated into DirectX and the Unreal Engine, because they produced a real-time demo earlier at GDC this year. So, like, it's going to be a big thing moving forward, but it's not a big thing just yet. So if, like, you don't have the cash right now, I wouldn't be super worried. You know, like, the good news is that actually these new GPUs are going to knock down the prices on the top of the range GTX graphics cards, and they're still currently, those ones are still currently powerful enough to power the AAA games. So like, if you are strapped for cash, I'd just stick with the graphics cards that are already available, because they're fantastic and they'll definitely do the job.
Yeah, I'm currently running a 970, so it's the generation before, and I'm probably going to be waiting for the 2070 to come down in price. It's about, they're announcing it for $500 now, so, and that's a little bit too much for me. So probably if the cryptocurrency miners leave those cards alone, which they haven't done for the past 3 years, but it seems they're less interested now, the prices will become a little bit more reasonable within 6 months, I would say. So I'm probably going to wait for that. And what you were saying is really interesting. It's the fact that they're working with the developers to make sure that ray tracing is available, like, today in the engine, and for a few games already when they're coming out in the next few weeks. Ray tracing, for those who weren't born in the, you know, 70s and who remember hearing about it throughout the 90s as this kind of holy grail of 3D rendering, it's a kind of technology for rendering 3D images that actually calculates the light beams of every pixel and how it bounces off every surface, so that you have a realistic rendering of the image with the reflections of everything out on, you know, on every surface. And the thing is, obviously, this is the most realistic way to render things, but it's very GPU consuming, of course. So it's been used in CGI animation, in animation movies for a long time, but one image used to take, you know, a long time ago, several hours, and probably now several hours still, because they do complicated things. So the fact that they're managing to do it in real time is impressive. And it will probably add, you know, it will be a step up in terms of graphics, especially on, as I mentioned, reflections, you know, on cars and puddles and all of those things, because they don't have to trick the engine to display those reflections. They can actually calculate how they would look. So it's going to be a little bit better looking. I don't think it's going to be a game-changing thing, and especially what you're saying.
Totally. About,
you know, the developers aren't necessarily going to put all of the effort into these technologies today. So it's unlikely that you're going to get a lot of examples of games taking advantage of that technology until it's a lot more commonplace, which is going to be a few years away. So I would also not encourage anyone to go out and buy one of those. But of course, you have people who want the latest thing.
Totally. And come on, it's a shiny thing as well.
Is,
you know,
it is, yeah.
it's all about making things sparkle that bit brighter. But I completely agree with you, Patrick. And like, especially because actually, if you want to get the most out of these new GPUs, you're going to also need to fork out for a really high end PC monitor that's got 4K right. and all the bells and whistles. So actually, like the price tag goes up even higher, and you can still get a really quality gaming experience on the existing NVIDIA GPUs.
I think most people who do want to upgrade, and again, that's not absolutely not necessary. The people who do want to upgrade are going to wait for the 2070, which is usually the, like, I still really want to put a lot of money into my PC, but I'm not insane, you know, and that the price is, you know, $400 usually when you wait for a little bit.
Totally.
The other thing I wanted to mention was the Inside Xbox at Gamescom presentation, which is, you know, just another episode of the Inside Xbox presentations they've been doing for a few months now. And I have to say, I was a little bit disappointed at how it played. It was just, it was streamed just today, a few hours ago, and it might still be ongoing. But beyond the one that they did today, it feels like they aren't really hitting the mark with that series. It's, you know, if you don't know, it's the Xbox community team with Larry Herb, Major Nelson, and, you know, a lot of people from the team taking the things in their hand and communicating with their fans directly, probably in the same way, or at least with the same intent that Nintendo does with their Nintendo Direct. What I feel is missing from the Inside Xbox is they. It feels like they're trying to fill it even when they don't have enough stuff to talk about. And it gets a weird feeling of home shopping channel almost, like it's awkward and they're not very natural in their interactions. I feel the communications team is not doing its best job with this thing. So I'm not convinced by it.
It's tough, isn't it? Because like, I totally agree with you that there are so many developers that feel a huge pressure to say something when they don't actually have something to say. And I think that's just pressures that come from what consumers put on the industry. You know, we're always right. looking for the next big thing. And sure, we've just had E3, we've just had like all of these different conferences, and people still want more, and there's nothing left to give. So suddenly, you know, poor Microsoft is having to scrape the barrel. And I think more companies should push back and say, no, like when we're ready to give you information, we'll give you information, and we're not just going to do shows for the sake of doing them.
And this is a monthly thing as well, so you really have to have stuff to talk about. And it's, you know, it's the substance of it, but the form as well. I feel they're not very prepared, and what is intended to seem casual and friendly comes off feeling a little bit, I don't know, awkward and sometimes even a bit cringeworthy. So it's a bit disappointing because I, you know, as everyone, I want Xbox to be cool and succeed, and it seems that is not achieving its goal there. So so they talked about a few games. They spent a while on PUBG. If you go check out that segment, it's very awkward. They keep saying they're sorry, and they're not presenting really any new stuff that is exciting. So I don't know. I think they should rework this. But
what do they specifically say they're sorry for?
Because, you know, PUBG came out as the a preview at Xbox game, which was not complete. And apparently it was a lot less complete than they would have liked, and it was buggy, and there were things that didn't work. And so they wanted to acknowledge that, which I think is commendable. So Larry Herb went to Korea at the PUBG Core, and he spent a few days with them and brought back a kind of, you know, showcase presentation of the devs talking to the community. And it felt like, I don't know. I mean, when I worked at Blizzard, I was in PR, so maybe that colored my image of it. But sometimes the narrative you're threading becomes the things you're saying become the narrative for the audience. And at that, in that presentation, which lasted for 10 minutes, they acknowledged their issues with the game. And then they said, oh, but we're launching 1.0 and it's going to be great. It's launching in September and the game is finally going to be complete. So what I'm hearing as a gamer isn't necessarily, oh, the game is finally going to be complete. It's, oh, it was crap until now and didn't work. Mm. So I think it's great to acknowledge that you've had issues and to apologize for it. Absolutely, it's super important. But you definitely have to then follow that up with something to hype. Or something to, you know, look forward to for the players. And they're going to have the map, you know, Sandhawk, that was available on PC for a long time. But that's not super exciting because everyone knows about it. So, I don't know. I think the way the message is crafted, and that's pure, you know, PR comms thing. It's basically marketing wrapper around the actual facts. But it matters. And I think they're not doing the best job they could there. So...
Sure, you need to, I guess it's like the tank and spank mentality, isn't it? You know, you have the mm-hmm. tank of the sorry, and then you follow it up with something else to look forward to.
Exactly,
and yeah, that's a shame.
Mm. So, I mean, they might have announced the Elite controller, the second one now. It might still be going on, I'm not sure, but we'll update you if we hear about this during the show. But yeah, so that was a little bit underwhelming. It's not quite Gamescom. It was leaked just before Gamescom, but Blizzard announced Diablo 3 coming to the Switch, which is kind of exciting and at the same time kind of, well, I played this a million times already, so I don't know if I want to buy it again to start from scratch on the Switch. But apparently, according to the initial tests and reviews, it is running really well, 60 frames per second or close to, and it is, but the resolution of course accommodates that. So portable mode is 720, and on the home console TV, it's 900p. Understandable. Yeah, Diablo 3, I keep joking that it's basically Blizzard's Skyrim. It's going to show up on toasters pretty soon. It's on everything. So are you going to play Diablo 3 on the Switch?
Yeah, like I think I will. I mean, it packs in a lot because it's got the original game plus the Reaper of Souls expansion plus adventure mode that's fully unlocked from the outset. You've got the Challenge Rifts, Kansai's Cube, the Crusader class. Like, there's a lot of content in there. And, like, I never finished the first one. So, and, like, the thing that I've loved about the Nintendo Switch as a console is that there have been loads of games that I've never finished on a normal kind of console or PC, because I always got pulled away in my life to other things. But because I can take the Switch on my commute, I'm kind of, I find a really,
it's a catch-up
set
console.
Pocket. Yeah. Yeah. So actually, like, it means that if you are playing a game, you know, there's always going to be a set period of time during your day when you can play that. And you actually end up completing more games. So it's been great to go back and try the games that you kind of missed or didn't finish first time round.
Yeah, that's very true. There's a few of those that I got on the Switch just for that reason. I do think it's a little bit too bad that you don't have cross save, at least across consoles. And
yeah,
I think to an extent Sony is to blame for this, and we've talked about this for, you know, when the issue arose with Fortnite. And by the way, Bethesda is kind of making noise on this for Fallout 76, and they went pretty hard on Sony, saying, yeah, it's their fault if we don't do cross. Oh no, what they were saying is, if we don't have crossplay, then, you know, the game is not coming out, in so many words, which was like, whoa, okay. And that's, they were saying, this is the experience we want with the game, and that's what we're going to get. So it seems like the pressure is ramping up on Sony to find a solution, which,
yeah,
oh my God, please, yes, it's 2018. The world is different. I've talked about this before. But yeah, so
no,
for Diablo,
go ahead. It's such a good point, because, you know, at the end of the day, there's a reason why Nintendo has banked so hard on this idea of social gaming and what they say is bring your own console is the thing that they always talk about at their events,
right,
where
right.
they're like, oh, you know, show up with your Switch and play with each other, because they know how important social gaming is, and crossplay is a huge part of that. It's the ability to kind of sit down with your friends of, you know, whatever console that they're on, especially considering there are so many to choose from now, that the likelihood is that not all of your friends are going to have the same ones. So yeah, and
especially
Sony
on a game like a game like Diablo, where you probably already have characters that you've leveled up. I mean,
yeah.
not you, Alicia, so you can enjoy it for the first time fresh on Diablo. But for me, if I could get my character on the Switch version, then I would be like, okay, sure, I'll just, you know, fork up $60 again and whatever, I'll play it on the Switch as well. But going back, so I was thinking maybe if there was like an arcade-like mode where you would have max level characters with a specific build and specific setup of gear that you could go and choose from to play with your friends, because you can play with different Switches, everyone on the same Switch. It's like every configuration is available. So it's just, it's too bad. I hope they find a solution for that, but we'll see.
Yeah, me too. Fingers crossed. I know that it would be incredible for the games community who've been pushing for it for years.
Yeah, and Sony did say that they're trying to find a way to make it work and still have a decent and protect their business model, which I understand why they're saying this. I think the reason why they don't want to enable it is that if anything you buy, which is the core of the issue, anything you buy or have access to on any console is also available on any console, that means that you can buy another platform can do a sale on items that you go buy elsewhere, and then you have access to on your PlayStation as well. And since they have the dominant position, they're like, well, you know, F that. We just set the prices and we control the pricing structure. So I understand why they want to keep it like that, but still. Blizzard is having their streaming day tomorrow. They're going to show probably a new Overwatch short. They announced they would. The Ashara one for WoW. That's WoW nerd stuff. And there's apparently Lego Overwatch that's coming soon.
Mm.
Which, oh my God, I can't wait for my baby to grow up enough that he can play with Lego.
Of course. I hadn't thought about that. What a way to introduce your son to the world of Overwatch.
To my favorite video game.
Exactly.
There's a bunch of other things, dates announced, like Devil May Cry is coming out March 2019. There's some new gameplay footage with a crazy dual bike swords, which is insane. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, I think it's Dante, but I'm not sure. He jumps in the fray on a bike that he then splits into and hits monsters with. It's insane, but it's funny. There's a bunch of other things. Shenmue 3 was announced as launching on August 2019, which, I mean, okay. Not going to comment anymore on Shenmue 3.
It feels like Boy Who Cried Wolf, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's and I mean, the state of what we've seen like a few months ago only was like, I don't think that game's ready for launching in a year, even in a year. I mean, anyway, we'll see.
We're 2 years over the point where he said that it was going to launch, aren't we?
I don't even remember, you know, when it's, I mean, the Kickstarter, was it 2016? The Kickstarter?
Yeah.
So
I'm sure that it was 2 years ago was the original release
date. But that was the launch of the Kickstarter, not the release day, I don't think. Was it?
Maybe.
Oh, no, wait, you're right. It was 2015, the Kickstarter.
Yeah, because it was, jeez. No, I'm sure it was, because it was, I remember being there at the E3 when it was announced.
Yeah.
And yeah, that would have been 2015. So yeah, it's been a while.
I mean, I understand these kinds of games take a while to develop. That is not even necessarily my biggest issue. The issue is what we've seen of it, you know, what they've presented, which felt like not even it felt like it was developed on Dreamcast, like almost. I'm joking, but I'm kind of not. But
yeah.
Anyway, we'll see. A bunch of things happening at Gamescom. We're probably missing a couple of things that's happening right now. If we are, we'll talk about them next episode. Another thing I did want to mention and discuss is the rumors that seem to be quite solid about Microsoft's next Xbox consoles. And there are going to be apparently two models, and both of them are going to rely on the cloud quite a bit. So basically, I'm not going to beat around the bush for very long. The games on the next Xbox consoles would be playable either as physical media on the more expensive console, which would be a traditional one, or be playable as streaming with the Xbox streaming service, in the same way that, you know, we've seen on Live back in the day. Shadow PC does this for in another way, but it's basically video streaming of your game, and the server is up in the cloud streaming you the video, and you only have the controller essentially that sends up the signals to the cloud, and that is how you play. So you don't really need a big box at your home. And for that reason, they are able to sell you another console if you wish to have it, which is only a streaming box. So it would be much cheaper. Let's say, you know, the traditional console would be $400. You can either buy the game physically or play it in streaming, or you buy the $100 console and it's just a streaming box. And of course, you can't play the game physically locally. So you have the issue of lag, and you need to have a good connection in order for this to work. But the console is much cheaper. And the other thing is that they apparently are including a little bit of computing in the box, and that allows them to do some predictive things to compensate for the lag in a way that mitigates a good portion of that lag, which is the main issue on these types of services. So what do you think about that idea? Do you think it could work? Do you think it's the right approach? Do you think it's even viable?
Oh, Patrick, to answer that question, I would have to have a full-on degree in computer programming, which I wish I had. But I'll tell you what I do know. I do know that many people have tried and failed to create a game streaming service, because it's a really challenging thing to get right. And I don't know if you remember, but like Sony acquired a streaming service called and also in one called OnLive, and so yeah, OnLive and Gaikai, and that eventually became part of its PlayStation Now service. And like we've seen, Nvidia has been trying to stream games to PCs, but basically all of these different services that already exist have suffered some form of latency, and that's been holding them back from being widely used, because at the end of the day, gamers want performance over, I guess, just
convenience.
Exactly. So, like, basically, what Microsoft thinks that it's done now is it thinks it's figured out how to handle the latency issues and aspects of cloud gaming. So, like, I don't know. Hopefully they've got it right, and it certainly seems, by having a cloud console with a limited amount of compute locally for specific tasks like controller input and image processing, and you know, that all important collision detection, that seems really promising. But I don't know, like, the downside of it all is that since more hardware is needed locally, it's going to raise the price of the streaming box, but it'll still cost significantly less than what we are accustomed to paying for a new generation console. So that should help expand the platform's reach. I guess at this stage, it's kind of like a seesaw of, it's a really cool idea, and we'll just have to see which way it goes.
Yeah, it's definitely, you're right. There are like some super positive things about it, and also some downers that are significant as well. I think, you know, there are a few things that can answer the very valid concerns you're putting forth. Neither Sony nor Nvidia had the kind of infrastructure that Microsoft has. You know, with the Azure service, Microsoft is one of the foremost companies in having infrastructure throughout the world. So I think if anyone can make that work, they would be one of those anyones. The collision detection you mentioned is really important, because when you're talking about lag, the really important thing is you don't want to either, you know, fall through a platform because the server is not in the same state as what you think you're seeing at that moment, or missing a shot because you are aiming a second ahead or behind what is actually the game state in the cloud. And that additional computing on the box is designed for collision detection, again, as you mentioned. So if they manage to fix that, it is a huge part, or at least to mitigate it. And finally, this is a dual approach. So you have the traditional console. If you don't want to rely on the quality of your internet connection or on the cloud, if you think, well, you know, for some games it's fine, but I really want the precision thing, then you can buy the traditional console. But all the games will be available on both, so you don't have to choose between one game and another. And the people who don't want that premium, you know, NVIDIA RTX 2080 Ti kind of, I want the best thing, can still have access to it for a cheaper price. And yeah, you're going to have, you know, 250 milliseconds of lag or 500 milliseconds of lag, which is a lot for a gamer that wants the best thing.
To play competitive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Competitive, that's out of the question. But if you want to just, you know, play Halo in single player and go through the story, or Shadow of the Tomb Raider or whatever, you can do that. And you can do that at the best possible performance. And even more than this, I think this is possibly the most interesting part. Theoretically, they could retrofit every single Xbox One or maybe even Xbox 360s to play, you know, to use that service. So instantly, they have a gigantic install base for that thing. They also have the Game Pass service, which includes all of their games, you know, for a subscription, which could suddenly work with this service as well. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of interesting bits in all of it, which make me think if someone can manage to do it, and a lot of people are interested, apparently Google is developing a similar kind of technology for a console, for a gaming console as well. So I think it's possibly coming. And if it's going to work, it seems Microsoft has the best possible approach to turn it into reality.
Sure. No, that's a really interesting take on it, and you're totally right that it doesn't surprise me that it would be Microsoft and Google that would lock horns on this particular one. Like everyone knows that the company that cracks game streaming, when you look at the likes of Netflix and Spotify and streaming services working in other industries, like this will be huge. So they really want a slice of that cheesecake.
Yeah. And we'll see. I mean, of course, this is still all rumors. We don't know what is really happening, but it seems this is the way they're going. So we'll see. Talking about the now, the Nintendo Switch. So Nintendo has announced they have sold about 20 million units of the Switch, and it was released in March last year, I think. So that's, 15 months, 16 months, something like that. That's a super good start, especially since they only had one holiday season. So really good performance for the console. We knew it was selling like gangbusters, so it's not that surprising. But I guess it does beg the question of where do they go from here? Have they front-loaded their sales? Or are they, you know, do they have so many good games already after just a year and a few months on the market that people are going to buy the console for those games that are already making a gigantic, powerful library? I'm not even sure. What do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I was reading a Polygon article earlier that I thought raised a really interesting point, that the Switch does have a really big advantage over traditional consoles because, you know, most households will own one big console for their one big TV, either a PlayStation or an Xbox. But Nintendo, like we were talking about earlier, like Nintendo are really leaning into this social aspect of gaming. They really drum it up in all their marketing, all of their games, all of their games events. They want multiple members of the same household and friends and family to all sit down on beanbags ideally and hook up their devices together and play all these games. What that means is that multiple members of a household have to have a Switch. So suddenly households aren't buying one console, they're buying four. So that's actually, that's quite smart in that, you know, this could have been a wave of, you know, every household buying one Switch, and then soon they'll buy one for another brother or sister, and maybe a parent will buy one. So there's definitely a possibility for it to go up. Because at the end of the day, like, Nintendo's created a brand new market category. It's actually, I don't know how you feel about this, Patrick, but sometimes I find it a bit strange to compare the Nintendo Switch to a PlayStation or an Xbox, because it kind of feels like it's created a new console market within its own right. It's not a gimmick, and sales aren't limited to existing Nintendo fans, and it's created this kind of new way to game, so it'll create its own space.
That's definitely true. It is a different beast, and it appeals to people who already have either, you know, a big PC or a traditional quote unquote console. And what you're saying about buying multiple consoles, you can buy some for your the other kids in the family and things like that. But also, Nintendo is an expert at releasing a new version of the hardware, which is still a little bit early to do, but it's coming. And at that point, you're like, well, you know, I'll buy the Switch 2 or the portable only version of the Switch, like the Switch Go or whatever, I'll give the old version to my kid or something. And we're also at an age now where a few of us are having kids, and I mean, people in my age category are still very hardcore gamers, so it wouldn't be incredible for them to buy a couple of Switches and give them to their children or spouses or whatever. I'm still a little bit concerned about the big hitters. I mean, as we say every day, the Switch has become a fantastic home for slightly older games or indie games, and that in itself can sustain the people who don't already have one, maybe aren't convinced by those. And we do have Smash Brothers coming, which is, I think the people who want Smash Brothers so much they're going to buy a Switch for already have it. You have Metroid 4, which is going to come at some point. I think it's kind of the same deal. But, I mean, we were talking, there's Diablo coming, there's Doom Eternal is actually launching on the Switch, the sequel to the 2016 Doom. We're going to talk about this in a little bit at QuakeCon. So, I mean, it's not like the sales are going to flatline tomorrow. That's not what I'm saying. But as successful as it is, I think what's going to, I know what's going to happen, actually. They're going to do some really cool bundles, maybe a price cut at some point, maybe not right this holiday season, but it's going to get to the point where people jump on not a sale, because the price of the console isn't necessarily going to go down, but a great bundle, and they're like, okay, F it, I'm just going to get it because everyone's talking about it and everyone loves it. So I'm optimistic, but cautiously optimistic, I would say.
Oh, is that what your crystal ball threw up? Cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
No, I hear that. And I, you know what? I think you make a really, really good point that it's true. Like, the Nintendo Switch has become this go-to machine for ports. And that does beef up its limited roster of exclusives. And, like, for me personally, that's one of the things that I love about it. I love the fact that I can go back and play ports in these little needly indie games. But I appreciate that that's not going to get people going out and buying it, unlike whereas last year you had Mario and Zelda, and people were buying the console just to play those. But I don't know, like, I think in the games industry there's a really big focus on what's next, what's coming down the pipeline. You know, a game is obsolete within a month unless it's an online multiplayer game, and even then it needs to have new content to keep people hooked. And yeah, like, we talk about games from 2 years ago as if they were forged in Neolithic campfires. And I think there's something really brilliant about the Nintendo Switch becoming a platform for games to be born again and to be discovered by new audiences, to play those classics that you might have missed any time and anywhere is a godsend to people who might have missed that game first time round, as we were saying earlier. So, yeah, like, I hear you from a business perspective. I agree. I think sales aren't going to go skyrocketing up, but I actually really appreciate Nintendo doing it in the time being before the next big exclusive gets announced further down the timeline. Can you look in your crystal ball and let us know what the next big exclusive is going to be?
I would. Okay, I'm going to tell you it's going to be a Pokemon game, and that might be the big thing they're keeping under wraps. And that can possibly be it. I mean, because Pokemon Let's Go is, let's be honest, that's not the next big Pokemon.
No, it's not. It's a nice little appetizer, but I feel like that's their strategy of like making sure that they've got some people trying out Pokemon on the Nintendo Switch, and like maybe some lapsed Pokemon fans might buy the Nintendo Switch just for that. But it's just making that, because this is like the first Pokemon game to actually make its home on the Nintendo Switch proper. So it's almost bedding down before it launches the big one later and gets all the teething issues out of the way.
I think 2019 will be probably Pokemon and Metroid Prime. So we'll see what happens there. So talking about the Switch, I do want to talk about a couple of games I've been playing quite a bit. And the first one is Dead Cells. I've talked about it here and there. I've raved about it on Twitter. I did play the early access version on PC last year when it came out. Didn't quite get into it, but it came out on Switch, and it became one of those things that you were talking about, Alicia. I for some reason on the Switch, it's even easier to play when it's docked than the PC, because the PC you have to, you know, launch Steam and launch the game and get the controller and sit at your, you know, desk, and it's like this whole weird thing. On the Switch, I just turn it on, press thing. It's a console, obviously, but it's even simpler than an Xbox One or a PlayStation 4. There's no like lengthy updates, and the system that launches, if I want to just take it to the bed, I mean it's a Switch, everyone knows what it is. But so I've been playing Dead Cells, and I must have sunk, I don't know, dozens of hours already in that game. It came out on the Switch like, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago, and I played it so much. It is honestly a magical game. So it's a Metroidvania roguelike, for those who don't know. Essentially, the levels are generated semi-randomly, so it's fresh, but it's still structured. And you play with different, again, random weapons. There's a limited selection, of course, but every weapon is viable. You have different tools and weapons and mutations that will change the way the weapons work and give you bonuses. So you do your runs, and when you reach a certain point, you can exchange some of the things you've picked up for permanent upgrades. So that's how, you know, roguelike works. And it makes you stronger and stronger, and you can do better and better everyone to get to the actual end of the game. And it takes a very long time, but every playthrough is enjoyable, and there are multiple ways of playing through the game. And I'm not going to explain all, like, I'm not doing a Dead Cells review, so I could talk about this game for 2.5 hours, like, nonstop. But it gets so many things right. It's got a little bit, as I said, Metroidvania. It's got a little bit of roguelike. It's got a little bit of Diablo, even, like the way you play it with the items that influence each other. The combat is so tight. The gameplay is so tight, so polished. Everything works perfectly. There's difficulty that you feel is too much, but then you manage to overcome it, and it feels natural. It's such a great game. I can't say enough good things about it.
Absolutely. I've heard exactly the same things. I've not managed to play it yet, but you know, there's a reason why it got such a wave of positive reception on social media. And that kind of gorgeous, fun, frenetic, kind of twitchy, like, gameplay does work really well on the Switch, because it's very instantaneous. You know, you can just turn it off, turn it on again, pick it up on your commute, kind of go through a section, turn it off, immediately come back. Like, there's Yeah, like there's something really responsive about the Switch that I can just see it being an excellent place to play Dead Cells. Would you have played it on any other console, or do you feel like the Nintendo Switch is the place to play it?
I don't, you know, I think I maybe would have played it on, for some reason, psychologically, I feel like my PlayStation is more for bigger games, which obviously it's not, you know. Dead Cells is available on the PS4 as well, but it feels different somehow. And even those 30 seconds less on the Switch make it feel more like I want to use it more for that kind of thing. So no, I'm not sure I would have played it more on my PlayStation. Played it on my PlayStation. Maybe I would have tried an hour and then forgotten about it. I don't know, but it certainly is at home on the Switch. A few people have mentioned that there are some stutters graphically. It's suffering a little bit. The dev team is working on it. I didn't find it was too problematic. It happens every half an hour, you get one stutter or something like that. So yes, of course, if you're right in the middle of dodging a hit from a boss, then yes, it's going to be annoying, but it's very rare, very, very rare. So it's not a problem for me. If it is for you, then I understand you might want to wait, but for me, it is absolutely a must buy now. For now, it is high up there in my, you know, favorite games of the year list, along with Celeste and God of War and those things. So can't recommend it highly enough. Obviously, if you don't like these kinds of games at all, you might not like it, but I'm not especially attracted to the indie, you know, pixel art kind of thing. It's not usually my jam, but it just took my heart and kept it for itself, this Dead Cells game. Oh, and by the way, French development team, French company. So
shout out.
There you go. That's why the French, we know how to do things.
Stick together.
Yeah, exactly. The other game I wanted to talk about is Battle for Azeroth, the latest World of Warcraft expansion. And a lot of the listeners are going to be WoW heads or WoW people, because that's where I got my start. But every time, you know, this game gets me. It's obviously, as I mentioned, you know, I used to work for Blizzard and I do a lot of shows about Blizzard stuff. So slight ethical statement: if you don't want to believe me, then you can, because I am a little bit biased, I suppose. But I'm biased because I love these things, and World of Warcraft, how they manage to keep the game. I mean, the core gameplay of it is still the same thing. You're still going to get quests that ask you to go kill 10 wolves, and you know, it's going to be your gameplay rotation from an MMO, arcade MMO. That's still the same thing. But the way they dress it up into this narrative experience with these incredibly beautiful vistas, and they make it really easy for you to come back to it if you've, or actually, even if you only get to it this time, you get a character boost to start playing with everyone else. You don't have to play from level one. And it's so beautiful that they've added so many cinematics in the game, especially at the beginning. You get like, I don't know, 10 cinematics, or either in-game or pre-rendered. Not the huge expensive ones that are like CGI movie quality type things, but like the improved in-game pre-rendered things that they do. You get so many of them, and it pulls you in the story. The narrative aspect of it is expertly done for this expansion, and it's definitely fun if you enjoy MMOs, if you enjoy World of Warcraft. The beginning of the experience, at least for me, has been really good. The leveling has been great. I've done the Alliance. Oh, that's another thing they do. So in World of Warcraft, you have two factions, the Alliance and the Horde. And in this expansion, they have two different, entirely different stories. They have two different continents. And when you're on one side, you have an entirely different story than you are on the other side. But you do go invade a little bit, a portion, like establish a forward base on the other's continent. So you see a little bit of their zones and their the ambiance there. It's very well crafted. So I've been having a blast. When my wife and kid were away for a few days, it was well party at the Patrick House. I spent a lot of time playing it.
Sounds like a great party.
Oh, I mean, I was having fun. I don't know if anyone else would have, but I certainly did. So you were telling me you never played World of Warcraft. When an expansion like this comes out, do you look at it and think, oh, that's for the WoW nerds, and you don't really pay attention to it? Or are you intrigued? What do you think when you see that?
No, I mean, like, whenever an expansion drops, and like, I think this is the same with Elder Scrolls Online, like they're games that I've always been interested in, but I've never gotten into, because it sort of feels like, I know that these expansions are designed to bring in new players, but it feels like coming into like the Avengers series halfway through, you know, like you're like, yeah, what's yeah. come before? Who's who? Oh, where do I go? Like, what's there? And yeah, I've always just kind of, I think when I want to get into the game, I want to do it from the beginning and like, and do it right. And right, I think I just missed the boat with World of Warcraft.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, it's I'm always curious, you know, and even when I was there, it was always our challenge, because the new expansion is for a game. It's essentially a game that's already people have already covered. So we're like telling them, oh, but there's this thing and this thing that's really cool. And they would review them, of course, but it was a little bit more challenging than for a new game. I think now WoW has gone for so long that it's become this phenomenon that people cover anyway. It's like, oh wow, it's still going and people still love it. All right, then I guess it didn't die 10 years ago like everyone thought it would. But it's definitely in this weird place where the people who have played it at some point, I mean, it's been around for 14 years. There are children playing it now that weren't born when it came out. Can you imagine that? It's like, it's insane.
It's over three presidential terms. Exactly. A lot has happened.
So yeah, anyway, I mean, that is my,
Well, I was going to say, what would you say to, you know, to people who haven't got into World of Warcraft for whatever reason, because of, you know, time commitments, fear of, you know, not understanding what's going on. Like, do you think it's possible to get into big games like World of Warcraft now?
Yeah, I think it is. The onboarding experience is pretty good for new players. If you want to start at, you know, the level of the expansion, it's also very possible to start from the start. They've improved a lot of things that allow you to have a smooth experience from the start. You know, I have a hard time, even with all of that, I have a hard time recommending it, because it's kind of like recommending this band from the 80s that you love, but that is not necessarily to the taste of other people. I don't know. I think my attachment to it is so emotional that I have a hard time judging it objectively. So I don't know that I could recommend it to people. And I mean, obviously it's a fun game. I think people would be having fun, but I never realized it was so hard to answer this question. I would say there's a starter pack edition thing. If you want to check out what it's about, what the whole thing is about, I don't even think you need to pay for it for the first 20 levels. So you can check that out and see if it works for you. And already in 20 levels, you have a tiny little bit of idea of what it's going to be. Actually, no, you don't have any idea what it's going to be ultimately. I'm doing the worst job answering your question.
you're such a former PR.
Yeah, I know. Here's what I'll say. Find people who already play it, and no, actually don't even play with them, because they're going to take you in places you don't understand. all right, I'll give you an honest answer. If you're curious about it, I think it's worth the $60 that will get you through a good chunk of gameplay time, even if you don't keep playing for, you know, a few months after that, and you don't go into the end game craziness. I think it's a fun experience, even for the 20 or 30 hours it's going to take you to level. And it's also an interesting experience to have as history at this point. Like, you have to understand a little bit what World of Warcraft is, because it's part, it's like having never played Tetris or having never played Pac-Man or something like that, you know? So I think it's worth it, and I think it will be enjoyable. I'm not 100% sure you need to pay for the subscription on top of the expansion. I don't know if they give you a free month. Maybe they don't. So you need to pay for a month of subscription on top of the expansion. But you don't need to buy the base game anymore. So it's really the price of a regular game. It's just the expansion that you need to buy.
Sure. No, that's interesting. It's cool to know that there's actually so much that you can try without too much commitment at the beginning.
Yes, thank you. You formalized what I was trying to say. They do a great job telling you what the story of, you know, what you need to know in this story is. They do a good job at this. And it's really just a, WoW expansions have become standalone games, really. Like, every time you get through it, it's the same systems to an extent, but it's really a complete reset from what it was before. And you can completely play through it and have nothing to do with either the previous expansions or the next expansions. Like, you were making the analogy to an Avengers movie. It kind of is a little bit of an Avengers movie, but it's more like one of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies that you don't need, you know, that doesn't involve all of the other characters. It's like Captain America 1 or 2. You know, you can enjoy that movie without having seen all of the other ones. Having seen all of the other ones will give you more, but it's not necessary. So you can absolutely treat it as a standalone game.
Cool. Okay. That's helpful.
That makes sense. All right. I managed. After 15 minutes of rambling, I got to that's helpful.
No, it's a big game to sum up.
Yeah. That's true. All right. So that's what I've been playing. Looking forward to Spider-Man coming out in a couple of weeks and a bunch of other things. So we'll talk about those when the time comes. Quick detour via EVO and QuakeCon. EVO is, of course, the giant fighting game tournament that takes place every year. I think it's in Vegas, but there's always announcements there, and a couple of crazy things happened. Tekken 7 is going to have Negan from The Walking Dead. And you're like, what?
I know.
It's kind of insane. Are you a fighting game girl, or... is that something you follow from afar?
Yeah, no, I've played a whole bunch of Tekken 7. We did a series at IGN where we got Ryan Hart in and we trained a guy up within a few weeks to compete on a main stage. And it got me really into Tekken 7. And I mean, it's an interesting one, because like Noctis from Final Fantasy has also been a guest character. And I feel like... Just curveballs of guest characters are kind of becoming a bit of a thing. But I kind of like the idea of Negan. Like, do you watch The Walking Dead?
I didn't watch the latest season. I've read all of the comics, though. And Negan is the kind of character that would fit quite well in the Tekken universe, where fathers throw their children off cliffs and vice versa.
Totally. He's that kind of messed up. But it's interesting that they're putting kind of Jeffrey Dean Morgan, the TV version of Negan, into Tekken 7. Because I guess it kind of makes sense because of the graphical realism that Tekken 7's going for. I'll be intrigued to see like what the moveset is. I think he's going to be a real bruiser of a character, where... with probably not that many aerial moves, should be pretty good for like wall bounce setups and things, probably, very much using Lucille and like kind of like heavy and power. And
For those who don't know, Lucille is Negan's bat, barbed wired bat, whom he loves very dearly for various reasons. but yes, it's kind of crazy. Can you imagine the conversation between whoever it was and Jeffrey Dean Morgan to tell him, like, so we want to put you through Negan in a game about beating people up. And he's like, hey, I mean, I don't know, maybe he's a gamer, but you know, it's like,
oh,
wait,
I'd
you want to do
that
what?
If he were.
It would be It'd awesome. Be so that would be great.
I want to see the let's play of him playing Negan within the game.
As Negan. He has to be in character as
yes,
he's playing him.
Absolutely.
That would be a great, great piece of promo, actually. That would be
good. Yeah.
So you're going to be able to play Negan against Akuma and oh, crap, what's the Fatal Fury one? The first DLC character they added. Oh, my God. I forgot.
No, I'm blanking.
Anyway, okay, so yes, him. It's kind of insane. Terry Bogart talking about
the
Fatal Fury.
Guy,
the blonde
Geese
guy.
Howard.
Thank you, Geese Howard. Geez, how can I forget? It's my whole childhood. Terry Bogart is going to be in Fighting EX Layer, which, I mean, we're getting into fighting game nerdiness here. So that's kind of its own kind of craziness. There's okay, bunch of other things, fighting games people don't necessarily care about. QuakeCon, Doom Eternal, a lot of gameplay of Doom Eternal at QuakeCon. There was some other things from Fallout 76, but the main thing was definitely the reveals for Doom Eternal. It feels like a sequel to Doom, to the 2016 Doom, which I absolutely loved. There aren't a lot of new things. There are some elements of multiplayer where you can invade someone else's game if they've completed it and they're still playing. So you invade them as a demon and try to kill them. That could be fun. It's coming on the Switch. I think same release date, but I'm not 100% sure. Is it Panic Button that's doing it? Yeah, Panic Button. They're the magicians. Of the Switch conversion. Oh, by the way, Diablo 3 is not being developed by Blizzard on the Switch. It's Iron Galaxy, the people who did Skyrim. And so I had supposed that it was like a training project for Blizzard for other things they wanted to do on the Switch. I guess that theory is out the window because I think Blizzard is working on Switch stuff, but I don't know. That kind of actually might disprove it if it's not them who's doing the conversion. But anyway, Doom Eternal. Did you like Doom the 2016 if you played it? And what did you think of this very long gameplay session that they showed?
I didn't play a lot of the 2016 Doom. I dipped into it enough because I love Mark Brown's Game Maker's Toolkit, and he did a really interesting episode on where he talked about the system of like how you gain back health and like player behavior of encouraging you to be more aggressive.
To
and I was
jump
like, oh,
into the action, yeah. Oh, yeah. Game Maker's Toolkit. If you don't watch it on YouTube, it's a fantastic series. Yeah.
It's so, so good. And it just delves into kind of little ways that game developers encourage our different behaviors within games and gently nudge us through it. And Doom is a really interesting example of that. I did play it in VR, funnily enough.
Oh.
Which going eyeball to eyeball with a Caco Demon in VR is terrifying. We'll attest to that. And it was really, really fun. But yeah, no, I've not played too much of the game.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it, as I mentioned. I really liked it, actually. And, you know, this sequel seems like the kind of thing I would be all over if there weren't another million games I'm all over as well. It doesn't seem to... I mean, I'll play it. But I don't know. Ironically, something like Wolfenstein, which is where the narrative aspects are the really interesting part, the sequel is interesting because I want to know the you know what's happening in the story. In Doom, we'll see how it plays. Maybe it's different. I mean, it's a lot more mobile. You have a kind of dash that can change the way it plays, and it will have been long enough since the original one that I want to get back into that gameplay groove, but I'm not as tickled by this version. Like, I will probably play it, but I'm not incredibly excited about it, even though I really loved the original one.
Sure, yeah, no, I get that. There are games like that where you just there's too many other things that are drawing your attention.
Talking about things that are drawing our attention, we got a
Cool.
gameplay footage trailer thing of Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah.
It was, what, 6, 7 minutes? It's the kind of thing where there's a someone who's explaining what's happening on screen, and it's a number of different elements, gameplay elements of the game. It's what you would expect. There's an open world. You can do a whole bunch of different activities. They insisted on the fact that you're going to be establishing your camp with your band of outlaws, and you're going to be moving around and learning to know their stories and their things at the camp. So that's apparently a big portion of your gameplay experience, and you're going to be able to choose if you're a good guy or a bad guy through your actions, essentially. Like you can shoot someone, or that seems like something that is common in games, but it felt a little bit more natural in the way they were presenting it. We'll have to see how it works out in the actual game. So, yeah, what did you think about it? Were you already super hyped for Red Dead Redemption 2? Did this hype you? Did this kind of let you wanting or left?
Yeah, I mean, if Rockstar are good at anything, it's world building. And the level of detail that they showed off in this trailer is just phenomenal. And I'm really excited to see the kind of just like the little touches. I think there's a reason why you were saying just then that the building relationships with the outlaws and stuff felt really natural. And it'll be because they'll have paid really close attention into how you speak to your gang. You know, it's not like I love Dragon Age, but it's not going to be as clunky as going up and pressing X and going into like this dialogue. There'll be like conversations going on behind your back and like, you know, environmental dialogue and things like that. That I'm excited to see how like all of these relationships pan out and to play some of the saloon games, because that's one of like the best things about Red Dead is that you can go around and you can be a cowboy, or you could just go from bar to bar and get really drunk and play cards.
I actually they showed that it's possible to do that as well. Yeah,
Exactly.
it's true. What the one of the draws of these games, and especially of Red Dead Redemption, was the feeling that you were being transported into that world, into the Far West. And I remember when I first played Red Dead Redemption, after like a half hour, I got on my horse and started just walking towards the sunset and looking at like the wildlife and the birds in the distance, and I was lost in it, not just because graphically it was like that, a demo could do that, but because of what you're talking about, the world building through the little things, the conversations, the excellent acting, the things that are happening around you that transported me in this. And I did feel a little bit of that. I mean, I felt that in all of those trailers. I don't know why I'm not super, I should be super hyped about Red Dead Redemption 2. And I'm only
Sure.
hyped, I guess. You know, that's a
Sure.
good problem to have for a game, but still.
No, I hear you. And I think for me, like I'm actually pretty level with you on that. Like I'm looking forward to it and I will absolutely play it, but I'm not like, you know, tearing my hair out. And I think maybe that's just part of the hype machine, you know? Like I almost feel like it's because my body's being really like contrary to the popular opinion of, oh my God, Red Dead. And inside my brain's like, nope, no, that's a
You will
stick
not
up.
be like everyone else.
Exactly.
Now it
I
makes me
mean,
feel so good that you say that, because I felt I was weird for feeling like that, but at least I'm not alone now. So thank you.
yeah, no, and I think there's nothing wrong with being healthily, you know, looking forward to it, you know, but not kind of bouncing up and down in your seat, because there is an awful lot else on our
No,
plates.
exactly. Like, it's not that I'm not looking forward to it. I'm still looking forward to it, but it's not, you know. And I think it's also a weird disconnect between my anticipation for the sequel to Red Dead, which I loved, and the fact that, like, I'm not as hyped as I thought I would have been, I guess. But anyway.
Sure. I mean, I've reached the point, honestly. I said this when the last trailer dropped. I was like, do you know what? Actually, I don't want to see anymore.
Yeah,
Like, I
exactly.
just now, I just want the game and I don't want any more content. I just want to. It's just spoilery now. Like, that's almost part of the. If I didn't know as much, I think I would be even more excited. You know, like we've bought into this culture where we need to know everything before we play it.
I completely understand. I'm part of the no spoilers at all movement for movies, specifically. Like, I actively this is ridiculous. I don't watch trailers, and even if I'm in a movie theaters and they show trailers, I like actually put my fingers in my ears and start going like and close my eyes and go la 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 la. My wife pretends she doesn't know me when I do that, but I find I enjoy the movies a lot more since I started doing that. And for games, it's definitely a little bit of the same. Like I see a couple of trailers, and after a while, I'm like, okay, I don't. Maybe it's because I know I'm going to play the game anymore, if only for professional reasons. Sorry, I mean play the game anyway, if only for professional reasons, or that's what I pretend. But I'm like, yeah, I don't need more. Same with Spider-Man, where they started showing a lot of things. I would rather be surprised by other
Yeah,
ones.
totally. No, I'm with you.
All right, let's talk about Discord and Steam for just a minute before we close off this episode. Discord is, surprise, going to start selling games. It's going to turn into, well, it's going to add a store to its client. And I guess, yeah, that's not such a surprise because that's a really obvious way of monetizing their platform, which is, I don't think making enough money from their Turbo or Nitro subscribers, I don't think it is enough. So that makes a lot of sense. And there are a lot of game platforms on the market already, like stores on the market. Obviously, there's Steam, Good Old Games, and the proprietary ones from every developer or publisher. It seems like out of all of those, obviously Steam stands out, but Discord would be the one that would have an opportunity to be the second one, because it's so popular with gamers and core gamers in general. They definitely, I don't know that they're going to make it, but they have an opportunity, it seems, because it's agnostic and it's loved by its community.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it'll be interesting to see how they capitalize on that because they've already got this kind of base community there, as you say.
So they have 150 million users now. We'll see. It's a test in Canada at the moment, but it's coming. I mean, they already added the games tab, so we know it's half there and it's coming. And they say they want to curate the games that are going to come in the store. I'm sure they want to in the beginning, but they're not going to say no to people. I mean, if you're half reputable, I'm sure you're going to be able to get on the Discord store. And initially, I'm sure the big players are not always going to want to be there, but as the thing grows, it's another way of selling your game, and that's always good for everyone.
And I like the fact that they say outright that they don't want to sell ads or user data, so they're just trying to work out other ways to make money. Yeah, I like that transparency.
That is definitely important in today's world. And a quick tidbit about Valve and Steam. There's Steam.tv that went live with some Dota 2 International content. They said it was a bug, but it's possible that this is going to be a streaming platform. It's even likely, and they're testing it. So that's happening, and I don't know. Ironically, as much as I think that Discord would have a chance to be the second store, even more than Good Old Games, for selling games on PC, I'm not sure that Valve would be, or Steam.tv would be, that second streaming destination. I don't know why. It feels to me like the Steam streaming community already exists, and that's Twitch. There's such a, in my mind at least, a one-to-one between the two. It feels like Steam.tv would have an uphill battle in creating a streaming service for regular people. But I don't know. And finally, Steam might be enabling Linux or Windows emulation for some games on Linux. I don't know if it would work with Wine, which is essentially a thing that translates Windows functionality into Linux. I don't know how it would work, but that could be interesting as well, because it could enable, if it works for enough games, and if it kind of emulates Windows, essentially emulates Windows. I know it's not the exact way it works technically, but if it emulates Windows on Linux, then, or the Windows functionalities, then it means that games can be developed for Windows and be used on Linux, which means a whole new possibility for Steam boxes, which I understand have been a big bust. Already the Steam OS is not really working out the way Valve would have wanted, and they have half abandoned it, but that's because most of the games weren't there. If all of a sudden they find a way to reliably run Windows games on Linux, then you don't care about any of the Linux, you just use it to not have to pay for Windows on your gaming machine, and then it becomes a possibility. Obviously it's not a home run, but it's an intriguing possibility for me.
Yeah, totally. I think you summed it up really well.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes as well. And I think that is going to be it. There are a couple of other things like Fortnite coming on Android, not on Google Play. That's a whole thing. It seems Fortnite is also coming to the Apple TV. That's the next frontier for it, it looks like. A bunch of other things we don't have to get into because they're either old or not important enough to make the cut on this very important show. But yeah, thank you so much, Alicia, for being on the show with me today. It was lovely. If people want to follow you somewhere, I usually give people's Twitter accounts, but do you have any place to recommend people go to learn more about you?
Oh, that's very kind. And thank you so much for having me on the show. Basically, I think probably the best place is Twitter. It's at Alicia Judge, but spelled really weirdly, A-L-Y-S-I-A. But yeah, like that's probably the best place. It's where I post most of my stuff.
Excellent. Well, I include the Twitter accounts of every guest in the show notes, so you will find
so
that
so organized.
There. I know, right? You wouldn't think so, but actually... It's like the, what were we saying? The conserving your saliva. It's half the job is, you know, getting the Twitter accounts in the show notes and the saliva thing, and you're a podcaster. That's it. For me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can also find this show at frenchspin.com, and you can comment there if we said some silly things, if we said some clever things. You can let us know in the comments. And yeah, as I said, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, it's Not Patrick if you want to follow me there. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back in a couple of weeks with... Wow, we're getting into the almost holiday season, basically the pre-Red Dead Redemption 2 that everyone is running away from by releasing their games earlier than ever before season. And that's going to be coming up, so we'll have stuff to talk about. I think we'll have... will we talk about Spider-Man at that point? Maybe not yet, but we'll see. In a couple of weeks, we'll be back. Have fun till then. Play Dead Cells and other games. And we'll talk to you then. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.